I apologize if I sound tired this morning. It's because I'm tired this morning.
Did you run?
No, I didn't run today. I woke up at like 4 this morning and just rolled around in bed for about an hour. And the sleep that I got after that was just terrible. So I'm not sure what was up with that. But anyway, if I sound groggy, that's why.
Groggy.
I apologize. I will try to chase it away with coffee.
Yeah.
How are you guys?
I'm good. I did my exercise last night. I was doing about 8 miles on the bike. Tried to do at least 4 nights a week. And while I was away, it was basically a car couch potato sitting in the car. So last night I did 4 miles to slowly get back in the groove. And it was hard. It was really hard. You know, the hardest thing about getting back on a bicycle is like your butt in the seat. Mm. Because it always hurts your butt somehow, some way. Howard, my business partner in my website and, you know, Future Ventures, he owns a bike store in Long Island. And he's like a crazy biker. Like, he rides bicycles, dirt, whatever. Like, I did a little Instagram story the other day on his bike, which costs like $3,000 or $5,000. This bike he has with all kinds of electronic switch. You know, he's the owner of the store, so he gets the best one. Anyway, Howard said that's the biggest complaint, is that people take a bike out and they complain that their butt hurts on the bike seat. But he says, you just got to ride for like 5 days in a row or just keep riding. And then eventually your butt becomes accustomed to the pain of sitting on that seat. And then you don't notice it anymore. So that was
butt calluses. That's the word you're looking for.
Was that?
Just kidding.
What is it called?
Butt calluses.
Yeah.
Not called a butt callus, but I just made that up.
Butt acclimation. So once you get butt acclimation, it makes it a lot easier to go. So I did 4 miles last night, and then I was like, I'm enough with the butt acclimation. So tonight I'll go out again. I really got to get up to speed again. It's so hard to get and so easy to lose. That's what everybody says about, you know, the exercise or the stamina you develop. You know, when I used to run before I gave up running because it hurts my legs, my knees rather, I would, I could do like 3 or 4 miles on the track in the Lower East Side near my apartment. And if I took a week off, I couldn't even run a mile without being like, oh, why did I ever even decide to do this? This is ridiculous.
Yeah. You know, a lot of that is mental.
Yeah.
Because they say that aerobic, just from the aerobic side, not the muscle side, but aerobically, you can go about 2 weeks with basically no activity and you haven't lost any aerobic stamina. Now, that's not necessarily the same for the muscles. So your legs might have been hurting. But I think a lot of that is mental. I mean, I know that even me taking, I run 5 days a week, and even taking off Saturday, coming back on Sunday, that's the way I think of the beginning of my running week is on a Sunday, you know, afternoon. And that's hard just to start up after one day.
Yeah.
And so I think a lot of it is just when you have rest, you realize how much you enjoy rest. And to not rest again, you're just like, ugh. But
it's like you have this negotiation with yourself the whole time. It's like, don't be a baby. Just do it. Don't be a baby. Like, this is like literally the conversation that's going on in my head. Because last night I was going to give up at 3 miles. And then I sometimes when I don't feel like going way out into the wilderness, I do this loop near my house. And the loop is a half mile. So I'll do 8 half miles to end up. And then I was at 3 miles. And I said, this negotiation was just like, stop being a baby. Don't be a baby. Just do it. Don't be a baby. And that's like what I kept saying in my head.
A short loop like that probably makes it worse too, because you start to see the same thing on that loop and you're like, oh, not again. I don't want to do this again. I could quit now because I'm not that far from the house or whatever.
The reason I like that loop, and this is a funny little thing, it's like a reward and pain, because it's up a hill and down a hill and up a hill and down a hill. So it's like, oh, I just have to get to there. Whereas if I go on a long journey, there's all these pitfalls in the journey that I'm kind of, this particular loop I do that's 8 miles, that there's pitfalls that are like impossible. So I'm like, if I just do this loop tonight, I'm not going to have to deal with those other pitfalls that are really, really difficult. So it's kind of like, you know, I negotiate with myself what I want to deal with. And that one small loop as I go up a hill, and then I get to like ride down a hill for, you know, a quarter of that loop, and then I get to breeze off and I get to like relax, and then I get to the bottom and flat, and then I work my way back up the hill again, and I keep doing it again. So it's like, you know, your heart races and then you relax, your heart races and then you relax, your heart races and you relax. And then sometimes I turn it around where then one of the hills is higher than the other, so I'll mix it up, I'll go backwards and forwards. I don't know, stupid games you play with yourself to keep life interesting.
David, you were exercising like daily for a really long time. Are you still keeping up with that?
Oh, no, that's over.
No, so lots of sandwiches and pasta now.
That's over.
Yeah, that's over. I the funny thing is I was something like 200 days in a row, and then one day I just forgot.
It happens, and you just like, that's it. You're off in another direction.
And then I could not get back on it. It was so weird.
Really?
So now it's very sporadic. The temperature's perfect for bike rides, so I go on bike rides, but they're not really intense. There are certain TV shows that I watch only on the elliptical, and I won't watch them anywhere else. And so I really need to start watching season 2 of Ted Lasso. So that means I have to get back on the elliptical. So Jimmy said, it's these little tricks that you have to do to make yourself do these things. And that's one of mine.
Yeah, for sure. I probably have those tricks, but I can't think of what they are right now. It's just,
it's built into you after all this time.
Yeah, it probably is. I mean, I still wrestle with, you know, just the motivation to begin a run in the morning. But I mean, I'm trying to hit a yearly goal. So it's a lot. It's just 5 days a week. It's like, I have to stay on it. I can't let up or I'm going to fall behind. And when I have a goal like that, it makes it a lot easier for me to kind of slog through it, to stick. You know, if I'm training for a race, I have a training plan. That plan, that goal, that date helps me stick to it. Whereas if I don't, then I'm just more likely to be like, I just really don't feel like it today, you know? Yeah. But I was noticing this last week. I'm so far into this year, into my goal of exercise for the year, that I'm just tired of it. Like, I'm just, it's just like, I just need a break. Not that I need a break. I just don't want to, you know what I mean? And I don't like being at that place where I'm just like, it's not that I physically need a rest or anything. I just don't want to do it. And I don't like that feeling. You know what I mean? It's not a tiredness. It's just bleh. Yeah. And so I'm trying to figure out a trick or something that I can put in place now to kind of make it through the end of the year, make sure I stay on track. And I would hate to get this far into it and then, you know, like miss the goal by a little bit at the end of the year or something. That would be kind of a pain. So looking for tricks, but I'm not sure I'm sure I've had those tricks throughout the years, but I don't know what they are now. Anyway, and that's exercising with making it. What are you guys up to? What have you been working on?
I started working on a Rockler video. I promised them I'd do a video about bent wood. So I'm working on a bent wood chair and with a steam bender. So I'm doing that. And I'm making a knife this weekend. Hopefully I can get the video out by Saturday. I always promised myself I'll blacksmith more, and then I was thinking to myself, what can I do that would make an interesting video? So I don't know. I don't know if it's interesting or not, but I decided to make a knife out of a crowbar. So I was walking up and down. Sometimes I go to Home Depot or Lowe's to just look at the tools to try and get inspired for a build. And I saw a Stanley crowbar for $10. I'm like, that's probably good enough steel to make a knife. So I bought a crowbar and I forged the knife out of it. I showed it on my Instagram yesterday. And last night I got a pretty decent grind on it. That's the hardest part, is when you make a knife, is when you go to the belt grinder with it and you're like, okay, now this is where I destroy everything I've worked so hard to get to this point, because you could really screw it up. And you know, like you have a knife vision and then you start working on it. You're like, well, I guess it's going to be skinnier now. Oh, I guess it wasn't going to be that shape. Oh, you know, and it's like going good. And then like you tap the blade and all of a sudden you have like a flat grind on a sharp edge because you tapped the blade against the belt. So it's always very nerve-wracking for me. I realized this week working on this particular knife, like that is the hold. There's always like, whenever we do any process, we're just talking about running, there's always the one thing that you may not always identify that keeps you from going down that road. And with me, a lot of times it's like, even though I'm always walking into the wilderness whenever I get into a project, I have a pretty clear idea of like the certain milestones I want to hit. If there are a couple of milestones that I can't see clearly, I avoid the project. I stay out of it. And I don't always realize that. Like, I'll just keep saying, yeah, I'll get to that. And then I'm not getting to it. And then I have to have like a real heart to heart with myself and say, what is it about that project that I'm avoiding? okay, I'm afraid of these four things that I can identify, and that is why. But I might not always be conscious about it until I actually sit down. And I realized this week, I don't make more knives because I'm always afraid of the grind. The grind, you know, no pun intended, the grind at the grinding belt is always the part where this is where I'm going to destroy it. And then I see so many other knife makers making incredible freehand grinds, and I'm always trying to think of the best jig to get the perfect grind. And then I see these guys, and I'm like, I'm never going to be as good as them. Why even bother? You know, that's the other thing that goes through my head. It's like, but then I have to remind myself, I have to be good for me, not necessarily for them. I have to be good for me to get good to the next one, and so on to the next one, and so on to the next one. And so that was a little epiphany I had this week, is that the reason I don't make more knives is that when you get down to the grind, which actually defines the artistic sexiness of the knife, and you know exactly what the lines are going to look like and how they're going to look, and are they going to be straight or are they going to be crooked? Or are you going to go too far? And then all of a sudden your bevel's in the wrong spot. And you got to just live with it and make it work. You know, that's a little epiphany I had this week. So I have to try and overcome that by just doing it 10 times as much, getting past it. Even if I just grind knives that I just never show or even do anything with, just grind them and then throw them in the garbage bin.
Yeah, I was going to say, is there a way to practice that at a smaller scale, like not doing an entire knife? And this is a question because I don't really know anything about knives. Can you get the practice of the bevel and the grind on a small section, or do you need to, practice getting it across the length of the blade?
It's everything. Uniform. It's like how, you know, getting that straight line bevel from the back. I don't know the terms on the knife, the hilt, maybe all the way up to the tip. And I think part of it is that I develop a knife shape, and you know, in this case, I blacksmithed it. So I got to a point where like, now that piece of metal is the metal that's like part of this story. And I can't go back and do it again because I have all this footage of me getting it to this point. So if I screw it up, there's so much pressure. And so if I take, for instance, if I plasma cut out of regular material, not expensive knife material, but if I, out of anything, even an old saw blade, which I often do, cut a couple of knife blanks out of that and then grind those without any pressure of trying to make them pretty or perfect, that's what I need to do. I just need to get past the stigma of the preciousness of that step. And like I said, the reason usually it's precious is because I've spent all this time getting to that point. And I'm like, now this is where I'm afraid I'm going to screw it up, you know? And so I got to get over that hump. And part of that could be just exercising with just, you know, non-emotionally attached pieces of metal that I don't have time invested in. And I think that's probably the answer. Just to develop the confidence, really. That's it.
Right, right. I want to jump back to the chair. You just kind of glossed mm-hmm. over that you're making a steam bent wooden chair.
Yeah, yeah. It's not that special.
Like that's like one of the most terrifying things to me is trying to make chairs are difficult. I've only made a couple of chairs and they're really, really hard. But steam bending is something I have no experience with. What part of the chair are you bending, or all of it? Or
well, like, I looked around my environment. I was like, what can inspire me to make a chair? And then we have these like plastic, me and Taylor fight about them all the time because I buy these $20 plastic chairs from Home Depot that nest really well. They're like a mimic of an Adirondack chair. We've all seen them. It's just like ugly plastic. Sometimes they're like light brown, sometimes they're green, but I always buy them and I get yelled at for buying them. But the thing about them is that they're kind of disposable. Like if I drive over them with the lawnmower or if they get hit with a car, it's no big deal. But Taylor wants to buy these Adirondack chairs that weigh like 100 pounds a piece. I'm like, do you realize we're like, when we put that on the ground, it's never going to move again. We're going to have to weed whack around it. But these little light chairs, I could literally drive by with the lawnmower and grab it and move it out of the way and then do another loop and then mow where it was and then drive back and pick it up and put it where it was. This is like this.
Have you driven over a chair in a lawnmower?
I have.
You said that just a second.
No, you like nip the edge. Like you try and get, like you're like looking, trying not to hit a chicken. And then all of a sudden you drive over the leg of the plastic out around.
Oh yeah,
I know that.
I know
the
that
leg.
Yeah. And
don't you, David?
Yeah. Chickens.
And trying to avoid the chickens.
I was just saying how I don't mow my own lawn anymore, but once in a long while I do. And then last summer I did quite a bit. But the Adirondack chair shape is super comfortable. So I looked at it and I was like, let me use the dimensions of this chair to inspire me to make this. So I'm making the arm bands. Like it's 4-inch wide wood that's going to ultimately be about 1-inch thick. So it's 3/4-inch pieces, 4/4-inch pieces laminated together over a over a curve. So it kind of have a bend up and down. So it's like two McDonald's arches kind of thing. That's the left and right. And then I'll do some wooden plank in the middle to create the seat. But it'll be reminiscent of an Adirondack style. So, yeah. And mechanically, I have a vague idea of how that's going to work. There's going to be some hardware, like nuts and bolts. And what are the nuts and bolts? How are they going to look pretty? You know, it's a little bit of a combination of woodwork and mechanical attachments. Maybe not. Maybe I just glue it. But I have to really take a look, you know, once I get there.
Yeah, I wonder if, like, the spring back of steam bent wood, especially outside, if you would have to account for its, you know, tendency to want to try to undo itself, flatten itself out over time.
Well, I use Type-On 3, and I won't necessarily leave it outside. It's just the inspiration was from the Adirondack chair. But I did use Type-On 3 just coincidentally because it was the one thing I had a full jug of. And it works really good. I never really used Type-On 3. Jackman, when we did the TV show, Jackman says he always uses Type-On 3 because it has more open-air work time. And I don't know. I just never use it because I didn't like the color of it. But once I watched Jackman use it a few times, it seems to be fine. So that's what I used. I think it'll be fine. But, you know, I don't have the design elements completely hammered out perfectly. So I'm going to find it while I'm working on it. Was that Type-On 6?
This is, we can talk quickly about Type-On. This is Type-On Speed Set.
Oh, no. I never heard of that.
This is a new product by Type-On. I have no affiliation with them. And I was so excited when this came out because with the way I work, a lot of times, you know, when Dan's over here, the hardest part is like, what do we do while things are drying? And this quick set was supposed to like cure that. Like it dries really fast so you can move on. And when it dries white. It's like putting whiteout on your projects. And
oh, really?
it does start to set like right away. So you have to have your clamps or whatever ready to go. So it's really cool if you need to move quickly, but it looks like there's paint on my workbench when it dries. It's kind of crazy. So it's a cool product, but it has its flaws. It's one of those things like you want to skip a step or you want to speed up, but it's not worth the payoff.
It's got a trade-off.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah.
We had a sponsorship with Weld Bond for a while, and we haven't for a long time. But I found that I really like Weld Bond glue, and I've ended up buying it since then. And it's basically a PVA, but it dries clear. And it seems to dry pretty quickly, quicker than a lot of the Type-On stuff, which, I mean, we also use, but I think the clear drying is one of the things that really draws me to it. And so I've ended up sticking with that. Now, I wouldn't use it for anything that was going to be wet, any outdoor type stuff. It would end up probably releasing over time. But, you know, for a lot of the stuff that we do, having that, just having the clear squeeze out makes it in the tiniest little gaps and stuff. It makes it a lot easier to have to, than having to like worry about little squeeze out and color change and all that type of stuff. So I've been going back to Weld Bond over and over.
But yeah. So to sum up, the chair is something that'll be on the Rockler channel, and the knife, hopefully I'll get that done. And then I have a small little film crew coming to film me, very small, one person. And you guys know Christine, the girl that I've done the denim with. Her and I got into this collaboration with Kadora Jeans, Kadora Denim. And so we're doing a video this weekend. It won't be out this weekend, but we're shooting it this weekend of me making a car seat on the sewing machine with Kadora Denim for my blue flatbed truck. So I'm going to be working on that in the next couple of days. You'll see some.
How many trucks do you have?
Yeah, that's a good question.
I have a lot.
How many? Because you showed that picture of that truck on Instagram, and I'm like, wait a minute. This is a different one than I've ever seen. How many? I just don't understand how many trucks there are.
I have my green 69 that I bought about 6 years ago. I have my Army truck, which I bought about 12 or 13 years ago. So that's two Chevys, a 69 and an 86. And then I have the blue truck, which is an 85. My goal is to get every year. And so that's three.
Gotta collect them all.
Then I have the 77 step side that I bought for Willie, which now is mine. So that's four. And then I have the flatbed that I just bought. So that's five. Specifically, I bought that specifically so that I could remake the bed because it looked like a good makeover when I saw it. I found it on Instagram. Green Money Fab. He makes barbecue.
Bob's holding up a second hand now
with no fingers on it.
I'm just waiting.
And then I have the hearse. So that's six.
That's not a truck.
This is the first.
We might as well go down to all the vehicles. Yeah.
Yeah, let's do vehicles. All right, so we're at six.
And then my daily driver, which is the 2018 Silverado. So that's seven.
Don't you have a Jeep as well?
The Jeep is Taylor's car.
Okay.
But, you know, it's under the company's name. And then...
put a finger up for that.
Put a finger up. That's eight. It's under the same insurance policy. And then I talked about this last night on the Fitz All podcast, which we taped last night. But so... Old man McNiven used to take care of my house when I used to live in the city. So
you're stalling. I want to know what number nine is.
There's no officially number nine. We're done counting. But the funny thing is so old man McNiven pulls up to me last night and he says, in the afternoon, he's like, how you been, Jeremy? And I thought he passed away. I was like, I'm glad to see you. I said, I thought you were no longer with us because he's 85 years old. And wow. And like 5 years ago, when I kind of last started seeing him, he was having like heart surgery every other week. And he was moving really slow. Anyway, I said, what? He goes, what have you been doing? I was like, I'm getting into Chevy square body trucks because I know he's a truck guy. And he goes, I got one. I'm trying to sell it. I'm like, Bob just put his hair back up. I go, oh, really? What do you want? He goes, well, it's an 88 square body four-wheel drive. You know, it's like hits all the marks, but he didn't tell me it was completely rusted. So he's like, I'm going to go get it right now. It's at the sawmill 4 miles down the road from my house. He goes, it's loaded with wood. I'm going to go trade this car that I'm in for that so I could bring it home so we could start stockpiling wood for the winter. So he dropped it off there one day with his son so they could load it for him. And then they called him and said, we can't move it around the yard because the brakes don't work anymore. And he's like, and he basically joked with me. He's like, they're probably just scared of driving a car with no brakes, is what he said to me. Well, why would anybody be scared to drive a car with no brakes? So he goes, I'm going to go get it and drive it home. I was like, okay, cool. So he lives about, my house is the halfway point from the sawmill to where he actually lives. And so I was about a half hour, 45 minutes later, I'm dilly-dallying on the side yard, and I see him coming down the road in this truck I never saw before. It's it looks like a plow truck for like a government plow truck, and it's this 88 Chevy square body plow truck with about 10,000 pounds of wood sticking out of the back. It's got like stake bed sides. And he rolls up and parks and goes, this car has got no brakes. I don't even know how he stopped. And he said, do me a favor. And he poured some brake fluid. He goes, do me a favor, look under the hood and see where it's going. Now, the whole time, he's 85 years old. So everything is super slowed down. He's like, do me a favor, damn it, look under the hood. And so I look under the hood and he steps on the brakes and I almost get squirted in the eye with brake fluid. Oh, there is a brake, the soft cable that goes to the front hub where it mounts to like a frame on the car, like a piece of little metal on the car, where it goes from the hard tube to the soft tube is like just rotted in half. And it's just the tube now is just sticking in the air. So when he stepped on the brakes, brake fluid just squirted out 10 inches. I was like, I think I found your problem. You don't have brakes at all. You have no brake pressure. And so he just left the car sitting there. And he says, I said to him, he's like, I don't know what to do now. I don't have the wherewithal to get it back to. I said, leave it right here. So it's parked in the field next to my house right now. Leave it right here and I'll get it in my property. And then in time, we'll figure out how to get you brakes so you can get it home. And so I drove him to his car and he left and he said, all right, take care of it at your convenience. I appreciate you hanging on to it for me. So now number nine is not mine. It belongs to old man McNiven, but he's 85 years old and you know his wife doesn't want him working. I don't foresee this thing ever leaving my property, to be perfectly honest. I bought the parts last night that need, but then when I kind of snuck up under the truck, I told them I'd fix it for him. So when I snuck up under the truck last night, this truck looks like it was in the ocean. That's how bad the rot is underneath. There's like full on like mounts that hold shocks that you could see all around. Like you could see through it completely all around it. Is what I'm saying. Oh. Yeah. It's there's holes throughout this whole frame. So and I got to go to the guys doing the stonework outside. Just turn their radio on. I'll go tell them to turn it off. But the so truck number nine isn't officially mine, but it is parked here. And it is exactly what I would want in a truck, except for all the rust and rot. So I'm looking at it last night thinking to myself, if I did possess this truck, it would really be more of anything, just a parts truck. The only good thing it's got going for it is four-wheel drive, you know, and even the, the four-wheel drive
was a great diversion.
Completely rotted.
Great diversion, yeah, but we're back to the, so I still have eight fingers up. You have how many forklifts?
Two.
Two. Okay, that takes us to 10. You have backhoe?
Yes.
One?
Yes.
One? Okay, so that's 11.
There has
what
to,
else we got?
There has to be like a car that's not registered or it's in parts or something. There's a hidden car in there somewhere. I know
the Cadillac's gone.
I got rid of the Cadillac. I gave it away because it just was too overwhelming for a product. Like, I just knew I would never make the time for it. That's it. That's really it.
There's something else. I don't buy it.
I'm trying to think if I have anything at my mother's house. No, there's no cars at my mother's house anymore. I get rid of everything. No, that's it.
Okay.
That's it.
Cool.
Yeah.
Right on.
I was thinking now I'm like Jay Leno status. I need to hire a full-time mechanic to make sure all this stuff keeps working.
There you go.
Yeah. So if you live in East Durham and you know how to tune cars, you want to be my full-time Jay Leno mechanic.
You get to work in a field with a bunch of old Chevy trucks. They're all parked in a field. Anyway, David, what have you been up to?
Nothing very exciting. I mentioned a couple of times the Neon video, which is done. But I'm waiting on a shipment from the sponsor for the video, and our local FedEx is just in chaos right now because of COVID. So all these packages are tied up. So that video is kind of tied up now. So I've been slowly kind of working on the second channel, and I've got a couple of videos to edit. And since I shot those two videos like months ago, I've lost interest in them, and I feel like there's gaps. I'm like, it's almost like I'm looking for a reason to not finish them because they're old. But so it's for me, it's really hard to edit a video that I shot 2 months ago because I'm not attached to it anymore. But I really want to get the second channel back up, so I'm working on some branding for that. And really, that's it. There's no new projects this week.
Are those videos something like you could reshoot? I mean, could you, would it be faster, easier to like redo them?
Well, sort of. One is a vlog at the go-kart track. And I didn't record everything I needed to. There's little holes in the story. I guess I could do a voiceover or a little talking head thing in there. And then another one, I went to an NHRA drag race, which I know nothing about. And that was a couple months ago. And it was fascinating because these funny cars and these top fuel dragsters, the engines have to be rebuilt after every single run. It's phenomenal. I need to learn about it a little bit more before I finish this video. But basically, the engine gets so hot that the spark plugs burn up after so long. So it's actually dieseling down the track after halfway. The clutch melts. So the clutch has to, there's so much horsepower. They get so hot that, so basically they have to rebuild the engine after every single run. And you do a two or three runs a day. So with this particular race, there is no separation between fans and the pits. It's all one. So you can go to these funny cars and you can just watch them rebuild an engine. It's all right there in front of you, and it is fascinating. And I recorded this whole process. Like, they they're taking all the pistons out. I don't know if they're putting new pistons on or new piston rings, but it is a complete teardown and a complete put together, and it takes about an hour or so, and I filmed this whole thing. It's fascinating. And
wow.
And that's the type of thing that somebody will take like a year to do in their garage, to do it in 10
minutes. Exactly. Yeah, there's a whole team. Every person has a job that they have to do, and it's all this beautiful dance that happens. And I was kind of filming it casually, not for a video or for a vlog or anything. And then when I got home, because I was gonna kind of do like a vlog, like a day, how a drag race works. And then I was like, no, this one particular story here of me filming this engine rebuild is the story. And so I wish I would have known that when I was filming it, because I would have got some better shots or whatever. So those are a couple of things that I'm filming for the second channel. Fascinating stuff.
Cool.
I've learned, like, experts will tell you, you know, when you have a channel to kind of stick with a theme or whatever, or a subject. And I guess mine's woodworking. And anytime I try to do anything outside of woodworking, photography or whatever, those videos just tank. My audience wants to see woodworking, and that is it. And I've been fighting that for years. And I'm like, okay, you guys win. We're only going to put woodworking videos here or things related to wood.
But you have a second channel, right?
I do, but I haven't posted anything on it in 2 years.
I never started a second channel. But the reason I bring it up is because if you listen, my recommendation this week is Steve from Woodworking for Mere Mortals. He has a new talk show, which is great. It's him talking to YouTubers about YouTube stuff, you know, which we talk about YouTube stuff here a little bit, and we get a little nervous that the average listener is not going to be interested in, you know, the baseball talk. But Steve's new show, I think it's called The Woodworking Talk Show. He delves into analytics and stuff and, you know, whether you should or shouldn't have a second channel. So it's pretty good. And it's real just casual conversation. He's not trying to speak gospel to, you know, newbies. He's just talking to, you know, Matthias, and I just did my conversation with him the other day, and he talked to Bourbon Moth, which was a good conversation. So I don't know, check it out. But I never had a second channel, and, you know, I sheepishly put out things that are unrelated to, you know, but I don't necessarily focus on one thing. Obviously I have all kinds of stuff going on, but, you know, when I do a video about my backhoe, it doesn't do great. When I do a video about, you know, my travel trip, it doesn't do well, you know. But I know that when I hit publish, I'm like, click.
Yeah. I think part of me is I want to kind of put a lot of energy back into the second channel. Is I think it would be cool to have two channels. If something happens, there's this other one that I've already have going, and it's already got momentum. And so it's something I do want to do, and where I can just, anything that's completely out there would just go on the second one. One of the harder things that I'm realizing is I want those videos to not take a week to shoot and edit, but it's really hard mentally to, like, not put that quality into those videos. Like, 'cause I want everything that I do to be the latest and greatest and the best thing that I've done. So I got to get over that and just say, hey, you can just shoot this with your phone and throw it up on the second channel and be done. But I did get a new toy. I just ordered a little machine shop mini lathe. And so,
oh, cool.
Yeah. We, our wedding rings, we do new wedding rings every year, and that's coming up next month. And I thought I wanted to work with some metal a little bit more. So that will be my way into metal lathing, a little bit more machine and stuff. So
that'll be fun. Yeah. Yeah. Is it one of like a little bench top?
Yeah, it's
like, which one is it?
I don't quite remember. 7x16. Yeah, 7x16 deluxe mini lathe. I did quite a bit of research, and a lot of these cheaper ones, this one is like $1,700. Cheap is a weird word, but they all come from the same factory, and then Harbor Freight or Little Machine Shop or Eastwood, they all put their little finishing touches on there. Yeah, and this one guy on YouTube did all this crazy research and compared these, and like the Little Machine Shop one is the best because of this and this and this and the tooling that you get. So I went with that one.
Cool. I think the first little mini lathe I had, I bought some parts from them, from Little Machine Shop, like a tool changer, like a quick tool changer and stuff like that to add on to. Yeah. So probably what you're getting is the same machine with those parts already put on.
Yeah.
I'd imagine. But.
And so I know nothing about this world. I mean, I've seen the Sultoni videos where he plays with these little lathes and makes stuff, but I need to find a video or a book or something that says, this is the first thing you need to do, you know, because I know nothing.
I know also nothing. Well, I know one thing. And this is, I think, one of the most important things that everybody seems to say about using a metal lathe is that the tool that goes in the chuck to tighten and loosen the tool never stays in the chuck. And I know that I've gotten yelled at for it, rightly so. And I know Jimmy's gotten yelled at it because I've seen the comments. That tool only goes in there when you're using it, and then it comes right back out. Because if you leave it in there, because it will stay in the, you know, the port in the side of the chuck.
Launch it when you turn it on.
Yeah, when you turn that thing on, it launches that right at your face or right at the wall or right at the whatever. So
I like my face.
As you get started in that, just keep in mind that that is like a legitimate, serious.
I think some of them have like a little spring, so it won't stay in there, right? Is that a thing?
Potentially, but not usually. They usually that's usually more on like a drill press. But I was going to suggest you leave it in every time, just to create the controversial conversations and so that you get the algorithm. So leave it in every time and do what I do. Just like turn the machine on and let it shoot across the room. Just like put that insert in. Demystify. That's funny because you say that. Don't do that. I have what's called an indexer on my Bridgeport, and it's for turning things to the indicated size. You turn it to predetermined turns. It is not a motor, but it has a chuck on it. So you put a piece of stock in it. Let's say if you want a piece of round stock and make it look like a hex. So you put it in there, you turn it, whatever, 30 degrees, and then you run the mill across the end of it. You turn the stock 30 degrees, you run. So now you end up with like a, you know, a six-sided end on the top of, long story short, I keep the key in it, but it's not a motor. It's just a chuck that is like on a stationary object with no motor. And there's a video, maybe one of the Canon videos, I forget which one. Everyone's like, I can't believe you leave the key in the chuck the whole time. I'm like, it's not a motor. And so the arguments in the thing are, he's leaving the key. It's basically like a round vise. It's not on a motor. It doesn't. It only turns because you tell it to turn. And you literally like, you turn it to the next determined size and you lock it in by hand. There's no motor. So a lot of people were complaining, just seeing the key in a chuck, which is essentially a vise. What's wrong with you? You have no safety practice. I'm like, okay. Long story short, leave the key in the chuck. Highly recommended for views and comments.
Silly question for either one of you. The tooling, like let's say you mount up some aluminum in there, or you're mounting up steel. Is the tooling the same to cut the aluminum and the steel? You just have to take lighter, shallower passes on the steel?
Exactly. Pretty much. I mean, you could use high speed steel, which are the ones that don't have little metal inserts on the end. Those are like
carbide.
Carbide. Yeah, the carbide inserts. Yeah. You could use the carbide inserts, or you could just use high speed steel. I mean, when you think about it, carbide didn't exist at the turn of the century when they made all this Industrial Revolution stuff. So you can use high speed steel. You just got to take light passes, keep things oiled, or you can get the inserts, and they would both work on both. So it depends on, you know, you just want to lubricate your cut, slow passes. You'll find this all out the hard way.
Yeah, that's how you learn. And I'm sure I will. Can you put titanium on there?
You know, I never cut titanium. Chris Zepp just did a video where he made his wedding rings in titanium. But I never cut titanium. And, you know, Patrick O'Dare, I think, makes titanium rings too. So you could see Patrick O'Dare's stuff too.
Oh, yeah. That stuff's amazing. All right.
Yeah.
Lot to learn.
Yeah, I would with the carbide versus the steel. I mean, somebody who actually knows machining would know the ins and outs and the whys and why nots of using those. Personally, I started with carbide because I knew that it was harder than anything I would be cutting, so I wasn't worried about, you know, getting a tool and a material that were like the same hardness or whatever. And it's maybe a little more wasteful in that when the I don't know how easy it is to sharpen carbide stuff, generally the idea is once it wears out, you spin the bit or the tip, you know, and you get a different cutting edge. And so whereas with steel stuff, you could just take it off and like grind it. You could sharpen it. I don't know the sharpening process. So as a way to get started to remove variables, I started with the carbide, but I've also barely done any of it. So
yeah, I recommend experimenting with brass. It'll be less frustrating at first. It'll be more rewarding because brass cuts real cleanly. You don't need a lot of lubrication. You start working with steel, it gets gummy. You know, there's like certain depths of cut you got to be conscious of. Like I said, you'll find out by making mistakes the whole time. I still make mistakes. You know, it's you always will. And that's just kind of finding your way through the dark.
Yeah, I've done a little bit of brass, which was nice. Aluminum, you know, both soft enough to easily play with and not feel like I'm going to wreck a machine. I'm going to wreck the material first, and that's cool.
if I like their lathe, I may look into getting their one of their benchtop mills. I don't have room for a big old floor standing one, so I just need a benchtop one. So if I like that, I may get into some milling as well.
I need to do more of that. That's something I've just barely dipped my toes in, and I end up finding reasons not to use it instead of finding reasons to use it.
That's what I was saying this morning. It's like there's that little hiccup, which you might not be 100% conscious of. Obviously you are in this case, but when you like avoid a tool or you avoid, and you gotta really have like a conscious effort with yourself to decide, what is that thing that I'm afraid of? What is that thing that I'm avoiding? And you realize, mm-hmm. oh, maybe it's, you know, whatever it is, you figure it out and you try and desensitize yourself to it if you can.
Yeah, I need to get in and just like play with it and not try to accomplish something with it. I just need to get in and mess with it, see what it does, see, you know, not worry about messing something up or using it out of context. Because I think a lot of that with the machining stuff, both the lathe and the mill for me, are the context has to make sense for the videos. Like, I wouldn't just randomly take a thing that I need to drill a hole. I'm not going to take it to the bridge for it to drill a hole in it. You know what I mean? But all the times that I don't take something to the mill, I'm not getting the experience of setting the material, getting the bit in, using the machine, and remembering which way to put this dial so that it goes the right direction. You know, all those things I just don't do because they're not necessary, but I need to find ways to make them necessary. So anyway, wow, we're like 41 minutes in. I haven't even talked about what I've been working on. I made a Lego sorter. So you and your fancy bentwood chair and your race cars. I made a Lego sorter.
Like a coin sorter type thing?
No. Simpler than that. So these are things that have been made. I didn't come up with an idea here, but I saw on Instagram this guy named Pete Squared a few weeks ago made a really nice stack of trays, and these trays have different size holes, descending size holes down through the trays. So you dump a bunch in the top, you shake this whole thing, and each layer stops a certain size piece and everything else falls through. And so by the time you get to the bottom, you've got these trays of individually, you know, range of size pieces across these things. Well, I didn't want to have big trays. That's the most efficient way to do it, because it's like a 12 by 12 inch area that you can just dump a bunch of pieces in and then you shake it. And so I didn't want something that big because I'm building a Lego table for the kids as well, a bigger storage system and everything. So I made this little kind of a stack that hangs on the side of the table, and it's got three layers of acrylic sheet with different size holes cut in them. It's really hard to explain what it looks like, but it's got a plexiglass front. Kind of looks like a cereal dispenser at a hotel lobby. Mm-hmm. Imagine that. So you can see in the front of it, you have three acrylic layers with different size holes. So you dump stuff in the top and shake it and they all fall down. And then each one of these layers has a knob on the outside of the box where you can spin it. So you can dump each layer. So you pour stuff in, it shakes down, then you put a container under it and you dump the bottom layer. Then you put a different container and you dump the middle layer, and then you put a different container and you dump the top layer. So you're able to kind of evacuate this separated pieces in groups. And it was mostly an experiment. It did work. You know, it's not an efficient way to do a whole bunch of them, and it only separates down to a certain amount of separation. You know, it's not real fine. It's basically three sizes. So I think it'll help with the kids playing on the table a little bit, and then they can just kind of scoop the bricks, the extra bricks off the end of the table into this sorter. It will sort them and then, you know, do some of the work for them, and then they have to be responsible after that.
So is it kind of like a brick, like a brick factory? I'm sorry, a rock crusher where it sorts the sizes as you go? You ever see that?
Yeah, kind of.
Like falls through vertical holes?
Yeah.
Did you use acrylic cement for the acrylic pieces?
No, they didn't really need it.
Okay.
So I ended up, I cut out on the laser these acrylic panels just with holes cut out and patterns. And then I 3D printed the knob and the little arm that reaches through the outside of the box. And it's got little grabber hands on it that fit around the acrylic plates.
Okay.
And so it's all kind of press fit together. Yeah. And it worked out pretty well.
I asked just because I've had terrible experience with acrylic cement. It's so thin that it goes everywhere. It creates an amazing bond because I think it's actually welding the plastic together. But it's, for me, I just don't have enough experience with it. And I just was not getting, like, if it gets on anything else, you can't just wipe it off.
You want to know the secret? I've talked to, because I used to use this in the sign shop when I was in high school. I learned all the tricks 35 years ago. That's why they sell those hypodermic bottles. And I've talked about this here and there, maybe even did a tips video on it 8 years ago. The hypodermic bottle is a squeeze bottle with the needle. And it's a very specific technique is how you're supposed to use that. You're supposed to, every time you turn the bottle over, let it inhale air so nothing drips out of it. So that's why you always have it half full with the methylene chloride. You squeeze it, you go to apply where you want it. The whole time you're letting the bottle inhale air. And it doesn't happen quickly because that needle is super fine. So every time you turn it over, you're letting the bottle inhale air so none of the liquid comes through. You see the little tiny bubbles sucking up. And then you give it a light squeeze where you want it, and then you let it go, and then it immediately starts inhaling air. So that is the technique you always... So every time you go to... I've seen it happen with students every time. They make a perfectly cut out box out of clear plexi, and then they go to glue it, and then they put a big drip across the front of it. But that technique is to keep the bottle always inhaling. So you're always constantly pointing it away from your project, giving it a pinch, letting it inhale air as you turn it towards your project, put glue where you need to, and then immediately let it inhale air again. And another mistake a lot of people make is they'll tape their box all together and then glue it, and then the glue goes under the tape. So you literally have to hold it with nothing touching that area. You give it a little tack, almost like welding, where you just give it a little tack of the welding glue. Let it cure up. Do one on the opposite end of your joint. Let it cure up for a second. And then you can freely hold it without it touching the table, without it touching your palm. And then you run a little bead of glue just down that joint. And you just watch it roll all the way to the other end. And then you stop. And that whole time you're controlling the bottle by letting it inhale air every time you let go of it. Always giving it a little pinch. So it's always inhaling air. Every time you turn the glue to the needle, it is inhaling air till you need it. You give it a light pinch.
That makes sense. I think I remember you explaining that before, and I must have forgotten because I've you know, recently, once again, had a bad experience with it because it's like super thin. It's thinner than water, and then it just goes everywhere.
Yeah. It works on what they call capillary action, which means you just need to put it in one little spot, and it'll find its way through anything touching.
Yeah.
Whether that's your fingertips, tape,
not
the
like
tabletop.
Wood glue.
Yeah, yeah. It finds its way between every little surface. That's why if you're gluing two pieces of acrylic together, you're doing like a long butt joint, you have to hold them in the air, make sure they're not touching anything, or hang it off the end of the table and only put a dot that's like in space, turn it around, put a dot that's in space, let it cure for a few minutes, and then run a bead down it while you're holding it in space in your hands.
Hmm.
And I warned.
Sounds like another practice thing where you just have to like waste a lot of acrylic to figure out that
exactly
that movement.
Yeah.
Huh.
I always told my students too, is that if you're going to, because I would teach them how to use it or what it was, don't do it on a tabletop. You know, don't do it on grandma's favorite drop leaf table because it'll melt anything it comes in contact with. It's like super, super toxic. You know, it'll. If you have it dripping on the bottom of the bottle and you put the bottle down, you pick it up, there's a ring from the bottle that's never going to go away.
Hmm.
Yeah.
Crazy. Well, so the Lego sorter is the thing that we've got coming out this week. And we have a bunch of other stuff going on as well that we'll talk about in the future. But that's kind of what I've been up to.
Is the kitchen completely done? Are there...
No.
Oh.
We still have a backsplash, so we still have to tile the wall where the sink and the oven is. We're going to do backsplash along that entire wall. We haven't picked a tile. It's just been hard to figure out exactly what we want. And then depending on what tile it is, will tell us exactly where, like how far up it's going to go. We're not sure if it's just going to go a little bit or all the way to the ceiling. And then there's going to be some... some floating shelves on that same wall, and that's probably going to partially determine where the backsplash stops, like at that shelf. So that's the last really big kitchen specific thing. Then on the opening that goes into the next room, we used to have a little pocket door there, like just a single, maybe 30 inch pocket door. And I opened that opening up really wide. And so the idea is to have French doors in there that are glass with so two fixed panes on the side, then two French doors that will open to about a 46, 48 opening. And I think that's probably going to happen pretty soon because there's nothing other than fear stopping that one from happening. It's just, I've never made big glass doors before. So I think that one probably will happen soon. And then the other end of the kitchen, there's still some cabinetry we're probably going to put around, like underneath the window, make a bench cabinet to where you could sit right by the window, set at the end of the table, and do some sort of storage down there. But so it's totally usable, though. I mean, everything is moved. Not everything. A lot of things are moved into the cabinets, and you know,
it's beautiful. I love the colors.
Thanks. We've been really happy with it. It's pretty cool. Like, we've had a few people over just stop by recently for different things, whereas we didn't have anybody here for so long, and we're still not having tons of people over. But people who have, like, our friends who have seen the kitchen on YouTube are getting to now come by sometime and see it in person. It's just funny that, like, my friends are being like, oh yeah, I saw your kitchen on YouTube. I want to come see it, you know? But so it's been kind of neat to have a couple people over and see a reaction from them. I still have to make the other two pendant lights because I made that one and I've been real happy with it. I like how it turned out. I'm going to make another one like that, but then the lathe broke. So
that was one of the questions I wanted to ask you off air, but I can ask you on air. Did you get a new lathe yet? And what did you get?
No. So I ordered a lathe. I ordered a Laguna. It was an 1836, I think, is what I got.
Good year.
And they they canceled the order like three or 4 days after. I guess they couldn't fulfill it or whatever, and they canceled it. And I decided after they canceled it, well, I'll just wait. Because I had also ordered the part to fix my small lathe. And I was planning on ordering the part because I was going to fix it and then sell it and keep the bigger lathe. And then when they canceled the bigger lathe, I was like, well, I'll just wait till the other parts gets here. I'll fix the small lathe and then I'll figure it out. So that part, after, I don't know, 6 weeks or something, finally showed up last week, the spindle. So I took the lathe apart, replaced the spindle, and it seems fine. So I guess somehow the spindle got bent.
The reason I was curious is I think we have the same lathe, the Jet something.
Yeah, what, 1221.
Yeah, 1221. And I wanted to get something bigger. I also wanted to get something that turns out so I could do a big bowl. And so I was curious what you got. I've had my eye on the Nova one forever. So that's probably the one I'll get, but I haven't researched it in like a year. But just curious to know what you got.
Yeah, I asked Twitter because I was curious for the same things. I would like to have one that spins, you know, so you could turn on the side of the machine. And I got a lot of recommendations for the Nova stuff and for the Laguna. Those were the two that kind of came, not any specific model, just those two brands kind of came up to the top. And when I looked at them, the cost of the Laguna was just slightly better for the size. And so I decided to go that way, but I ended up getting neither of them.
All right.
So all that to say, I still have, now that I have that fixed, I still have to make the other two pendant lights because we only have one pendant light hanging above our giant island. And so there's two spots with like no lights hanging. And so I need to finish that up. So that's the kitchen update, but it's definitely nice to have countertops and to have like a working kitchen for sure. I haven't been out working on the Carmen Ghia lately, which is a bummer. I just haven't had time. And it's funny because for a little while there, I was spending a lot of time on it and got a lot done on it. And I knew that this would happen. I knew that there would be times of lots of change and then no change at all or no visible change or like a lot of kind of grunt work. And I'm not really to that grunt work stuff yet but I just haven't been able to get out there. But it's weird. I was looking through my phone the other day and I found pictures of it last time I was out there working on it. I had taken some pictures of the progress and I'm like, oh, huh, I miss working on my car. And it was funny because I hadn't even dawned on me that I hadn't been out there doing anything on it in a while, and just seeing the pictures, I was like, oh, I need to get out there. So hopefully soon I'll be able to make some more progress on that. I've gotten some parts in for it. but I still, the next big thing is to make the rotisserie to be able to flip the body over.
That's cool.
I think I've pretty much got the design ready. I found some really great examples of those and different ways to do it and stuff. So I think I've got that ready. I just have to order the steel and get out there and actually start making it. So hopefully sometime in October that will happen, because it would be really nice to get the body off and get it sandblasted and just kind of have that stage of it ready to move ahead. Because there's going to be a huge amount of body work. That's where a lot of my winter is going to go, I think, just doing body work. So anyway, that's where that's at. We're like 55 minutes in and we didn't really talk about anything. We had kind of
we actually had a topic today, but
you want to tease it for next week?
Sure. What was it? I don't even remember.
Because we were groveling about all the responsibilities we have now, this many years into YouTube or whatever this career we have is. And I said, I remember a time 12 or 13 years ago where I would end work at 6 o'clock and I'd have nothing to do. I would literally just go sit at a cafe with some friends, watch them get drunk and, you know, watch the world pass by and discuss art and politics. And, you know, this world we're in now is so different. And I guess it would have been more of a conversation about, you know, that person then versus this person now. What would you change? What would you give away? What advice would you give yourself? So it's not an entirely brand new subject, but, you know, based on the conversation we were having before we got started, there was a couple of interesting points, and we can bring it up next week or the next time we have an opportunity to talk about it. Mm-hmm. What would you do, you know, the 15-year ago version of you versus now? What would you change?
Or even just like if somebody gave you 5 hours with nothing to do, what would you do with it? That doesn't happen.
I would fill it up pretty quick.
Yep.
Yeah. No, I just like, it's amazing. Even Taylor reminds me every once in a while. She's like, remember when 5 or 6 o'clock came around and you would just stop working and you had nothing to do? It's like, wow, I don't really remember that, but
I don't remember that. That was college for me. I don't think I've had that since college.
No, well, I would get so much done between like 7 and like 6 o'clock, you know, 7 a.m. and 6 o'clock in the evening, that I'd be like, okay, cool. That's, you know, I'd always reward myself by just not doing anything. But now that I'm up here and I have 15 cars to fix and, you know, but I enjoy it.
Oh, 15, huh? You skipped out. You didn't tell us everything.
But I enjoy it. I mean, I do enjoy it. Yeah. We could talk more in detail about, you know, what would change. What you would change. That's all. Whatever. We all make our own bed. We got to lie in it.
Yeah. Cool. Well, we'll get to that at some point in the future. Let me thank our Patreon supporters. We have an awesome group of people that support us on Patreon, and we are very grateful for them. And the top supporters over there are Corey Ward, Albers Woodworks, Works by Solo, Chad from Mancrafting, You Can Make This Too, Funkiss Artistic Creations, Blondie Hacks, which I'm sure you've watched her videos, Quinn's videos, David, about machining.
Yes.
But if not, she has a huge amount of information about lathing. Lathing? I did it. I said lathing by accident.
That's okay.
Lathing and milling. So, yeah. Go check out Blondie Hacks. Rich at Low End Designs, Full Steam Designs, and Odin Leather Goods. Those are our top supporters, but there's a bunch of other people over there, like Gary Oshist.
You said it
Probably
right.
I said your name wrong.
What's up?
Did I say it right?
Yeah, I know Gary. He's a great guy. I know he's a New Yorker.
Good. Yeah, cool. Well, he's one of the other supporters, and we're really grateful for every single one of them.
Yep.
And they all get the after show. No matter what level they are supporting at, they get another little podcast of us telling secret stuff, and I'm going to give an update on the secret stuff that I told last week, which is pretty cool.
Mm-hmm.
And so if you want to help out, if you want to join that group, go over to patreon.com/makingit. Or don't. We're just glad you're here.
Thank you.
Yes. Yes.
All right. What you guys got? Anything to recommend?
I'm going to recommend Steve. Why am I blanking on Steve's last name? We all know Steve.
Ramsey.
Steve Ramsey. I was just kind of drawing a blank. Steve Ramsey's new podcast is really good, and he talks to people we know. And I think ultimately he should talk to both you guys. But Steve Ramsey, you know, we're talking about navigating the changing landscape of, you know, content creation, and it's a good inside baseball podcast. And Steve has a great he's got a great radio voice, and he's got this like he says this like real NPR. Sexy NPR voice, and he interviews Matias early on, and you know that's always insightful when you hear Matias talk about details like that. So go check out Steve Ramsey's new podcast, The Woodworking Talk Show.
I'm going to go with the Eastwood Company's YouTube channel. It's great. There was all kinds of fabrication. There's car work. There's painting. There's welding and stuff, and a lot of times they're using their own products and they're promoting their own products, but even if you don't want their products, their videos are very well done. Yeah, they're really lots of great information. A lot of them are really condensed and they just get right to the point, and it's just a really good channel to subscribe to if you're into metal of any kind, like Metallica.
Cool. Yeah.
Really?
Cool. I have two new podcasts from people that I've recommended before, but they're two new shows. Destin from Smarter Every Day just started a Smarter Every Day podcast, and there's only one episode out, and it's just kind of an intro, so it's not even a true episode, but it is available on all the podcast players. And you know, I know Destin pretty well, and I am absolutely sure that whatever he ends up doing on that podcast will be good.
So yeah, of course.
Go ahead and get subscribed to that. The other one is, so I've talked about Sweet Tea Films before.
Mm-hmm.
My friend Joel does Tavin Dillard as one of his characters, where it's like this comedy character. Well, he's been blown up on like TikTok and Instagram with this character, all the little skits he does. But now he started a Tavin Dillard podcast, which the character is just tells these really funny stories, and it's just lots of great little, I don't even know how to describe it really, just really silly, a lot of fun. And so I would imagine that a podcast with that character, longer form, you know, conversation, storytelling is probably going to be pretty awesome. So, Tavin Dillard podcast and the Smarter Everyday podcast. Neither of which are really out yet, but they're coming. And I know both of the people, so I trust them. So, yeah. Go check those out. Well, you guys got anything else? That's that? Well, thanks for putting up with our rambling and our long talking about very little again, people. Thank you for listening.
There was a couple of little takeaways in there, I think.
Oh, yeah. A couple. Sure. Yeah. Absolutely.
Well,
we just didn't plan it. That's all.
Well, thank you. Love you.
Yeah. Love you, too.
Love you.
Bye. No, you can't do kissy noises. Ugh.